This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been around 15 years since I graduated from high school, but I'm still pretty salty about this one detention that I got. It was for wearing a hat inside, which I guess violated our dress code. But Mike, it was 10 degrees outside, and the only way for me to get to class on time was through this outdoor hallway.
That's kind of ticky-tack. Do you remember the teacher's name?
It wasn't a teacher. It was this hall monitor, and I don't remember her name. It was just hall monitor that I hate. And, you know, I'm sorry. I'm sure she has other lovely qualities and stuff, but, you know, I have this vendetta.
The dreaded hall monitor, right? It was always with me. It was this one teacher who ran the detention room. His name was Mr. Kaleo, and he was always on the lookout for any kind of troublemakers.
Speaking of Mr. Kaleo, have you ever gotten in trouble for a dress code violation?
No, you know what? Not at school. I've gotten a lot of them from my wife, probably a couple of times a week. You know, I'll get one of those. You're wearing that?
I love it. She's got to keep you on your toes. Well, I know one thing that you wouldn't get a dress code violation for is wearing Crocs, which have actually been banned in some high schools.
Well, and if just based on aesthetics, I would say that that is a well-deserved ban because those things are ugly. Crocs are. I've always just hideous, squishy looking shoes. If it seems weird to you, though, you're not alone, because we were pretty confused, too, about this Crocs ban. And we became even more confused when we learned that the ban was due to safety reasons.
Yeah, a little confusing, but we're going to dive into it. We wanted to look into dress codes and their history, actually. So we reached out to artist Grace Goble, author of the Bimbo Summit essays and more. She actually went to my high school in the Chicago suburbs and is a bit of a personal hero of mine for changing your dress code.
Well, I can't wait to meet her. I've always considered Crocs to be just kind of dumb, but not. I've never been offended by them. I wouldn't not allow someone to wear them. What was your reaction when you heard about this?
Oh, I mean, it's ridiculous. I think it's an extreme example of the same idea of what I dealt with, which is that putting excessive restrictions on what students are wearing can only serve to detract from the purpose of school, which is to learn. And the Crocs idea can be framed as a safety concern, but I'll roll my ankles in gym shoes. So, you know, it's just another example of controlling every piece of what students are doing.
And we also reached out to Richard Thompson Ford, the George E. Osborne Professor of Law at Stanford Law School and author of Dress Codes, How the Laws of Fashion Made History.
What was your initial reaction when you saw that? Was it just like, well, that's typical?
Well, you know, I was a little bit surprised because most of the high school dress codes deal either with questions of modesty, and then those are overwhelmingly enforced against high school girls, or they have to do with something that is provocative politically or culturally objectionable, like, for instance, marijuana leaves on a t-shirt. Or they have to do with gang associations, things that are associated with gangs. Those are the three big categories. So Crocs didn't fit into any of those. I was a bit surprised at first.
Thank you for those intros, Lauren. That's Lauren. She's one of our producers, by the way. I'm your host, Mike Rogers. This is Something Offbeat. It's kind of intriguing, I guess, you know, back when you were in school, certainly back when I was in school, I mean, there were kind of informal dress codes, but we just seem to be hearing a lot more about them these days. Is that my imagination?
No, I don't think it is. I think high school dress codes have always been a big thing, but I think post COVID, as people are coming back to the office and getting back out into public, people are thinking more about how they want to present themselves, and organizations are thinking more about how they want to regulate what people wear in public.
You actually have studied the history of dress codes, and I'm looking at this sheet that Lauren prepared for me, and there's something called sumptuary law. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, you are.
What is a sumptuary law? This goes back how far?
Oh, it goes back to the late Middle Ages, so the 1300s. And the sumptuary laws, they covered a wide range of consumption. The general thrust was they were designed to ensure that people didn't display wealth in a way that was inconsistent with their assigned social status. So a lot of them involved clothing and regulations about who could wear the most luxurious clothing, reserving those things to the aristocracy or in some cases to the monarchy, trying to make sure that the common person couldn't wear this very nice clothing and kind of pass themselves off as members of the elite.
That's fascinating. So if I were a peasant back in the Middle Ages, I couldn't wear fancy clothes. It would be against the law.
You'd be subject to arrest. And the people who were most likely to do this, because the clothing was very expensive, were skilled tradespeople and merchants and bankers. So they weren't in the aristocracy. They were commoners, but they had money. And yes, they could be subject to arrest for wearing clothing that was reserved to the elite.
Did these laws come from the nobility or did they come from the church?
They mainly came from the nobility, and the church also had regulations that mainly had to do with morals. So they were about ensuring that women dressed appropriately. Sometimes they restricted what people could wear according to their religion. So for instance, Jewish people were often required by ecclesiastical laws to wear clothing that signified that they were Jewish. And some of the church laws also involved women of ill repute. But the sumptuary laws mainly came from the aristocracy. So for instance, Henry VIII and Queen Elizabeth I passed a whole series of what were called acts of apparel that regulated what people could wear. And they were quite elaborate. They would ranks and gradations. So one line said something like, "No one below the rank of a knight of the garter may wear purple silk on their cloak." Quite elaborate.
And what were the punishments for violation of these codes?
Well, one person's punishment was public shaming. So he was arrested on the streets of London in 1545 for wearing what was described as a great and monstrous, outrageous pair of trunk hose. And trunk hose are these kind of puffy trousers that you might associate with William Shakespeare. They were fashioned for men in the Elizabethan era. He had his clothing seized by the authorities and the linings of the pants ripped out. And then he was marched through the streets with the linings trailing behind him for everyone to see, back to his place of residence. And his residence was searched, where they found more offending garments. And those were likewise torn and the linings ripped out.
I'm guessing drag queens would have been frowned upon back then.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm glad you mentioned the saggy pants, because that's the one example that I keep thinking of. And that's fairly recent. Pushback against that fairly widespread in the U.S., or does it vary by region?
I would say it varies a bit by region, but I do think the pushback is pretty widespread now. You know, back in the 1990s and early 2000s, there were a lot of cities that passed sagging pants ordinances. You know, one of the things about fashion is that the things that seem outrageous or scandalous change and they become mainstream. And I think when sagging pants were first a style, they were very shocking to some people. You know, now I think most people are kind of used to them.
Do the people who make up these rules justify them sometimes by saying, well, like in the case of the Crocs, saying they're dangerous, they're not safe?
Yes. Yeah. Usually in today's environment, the two main justifications are either safety or modesty. So, you know, the sagging pants, for instance, were attacked as public indecency. You're showing your underwear, you're not covered appropriately. Now, I don't think that was the real justification. I think the real reason was that they were associated with an African-American subculture. But that was the justification. And then safety is often another one that's advanced.
All right, so Lauren, at the top of the episode, you mentioned that Grace went to your high school.
Yes, and I remember when I was a local reporter still in that area, seeing this post on social media about her standing up to the school's dress code, and I was still reeling from my hat incident at the time, so I was so proud. I was like, yeah, someone's finally doing something about it. And she even ended up making national news with what she did.
Tell me how that all started.
Yeah, so in the summer of 2017, all of the seniors took our yearbook pictures, and then we get sent the proofs before we get to approve which one we're going to use in the yearbook. And I took my picture at the beginning of the summer, and then I think in August, maybe, everyone was getting their proofs, and I just got an email saying that there was an issue with my pictures. And so I logged into whatever the portal was, and I saw that it was because I wasn't in compliance with the dress code.
Uh-oh.
So I was wearing a sweater that just had the tops of my shoulders showing. And shoulders, in our dress code, it said that girls' shoulders had to be covered. And I actually didn't like my picture. I was kind of happy that it got rejected because I wanted to retake it. But I had had conversations with my friends for years about how the dress code was unfair and targeted girls more than boys. And so I made the petition not for my photo to be included because I was like, sure, I didn't follow the rules, I'll retake it. However, the rules should change.
That old shoulder rule, that seems kind of picky.
Yeah. And the issue also was that the rule was inconsistently enforced. So I had worn that sweater to school before and it hadn't been an issue.
So you get people aware of this. I mean, you raised awareness for sure. And then what happened? Was it ever resolved?
Yeah. So we had just gotten a new principal that year. So I started as time off, really fun. And so he called me to talk about it. And we decided together that we were going to start a project of redoing the school's dress code. So then the fall of my senior year, I was part of a committee of, I think, 10 students who met with the administration and talked about how we can revise the dress code to be fair and make sense for all students. Because the language in it was gendered, which it didn't need to be. And there also just were rules that were outdated and hard to enforce. And the way it was resolved was that we redid the dress code and the school decided to let my picture be in the yearbook, which wasn't the intention, but it worked out.
What you wear to school, that's an important part of who you are.
Yeah, I think especially for students who aren't cisgender or not white, I don't have those issues, but what you wear is an expression of your identity. And to have all of these really focused and specific rules about what you are and aren't allowed to wear just makes it harder to be a person and and exist when the things that you're trying to do, like wearing Crocs, isn't taking away from anyone else's experience or identity. And it's not hurting anyone.
What crosses the line for you? Where would you step back and say, maybe that's too much?
I think when it's about safety, I have no issue with that. You have to wear shoes. You have to cover your body so that you are protected. My issue mostly is that some of these rules target different groups of people in unequal ways.
All right, now, Lauren, there is one proposed solution to these dress code issues, and I think you know what that is.
Yeah, and even though I remember spending like way too much time deciding what to wear to high school, I know that teenage me would have dreaded this solution, especially based on what my mom told me about going to Catholic school.
And that is?
School uniforms.
Do you find that a lot of schools, I mean, with these dress codes, they just reach a point where they throw their hands up and say, all right, everyone has to wear uniforms. They see uniforms as the answer.
Yes, there are a few schools that have moved in that direction. And I think you're right to suggest that, you know, regulating one thing after the other, after the other. And, you know, high school kids are smart and they'll come up with a way around it to, you know, to do what they want to do despite the dress code. A uniform seems like an easy solution. And it's also a solution that gets outside of the kind of status competition that you often see around clothing. So those are some of the arguments advanced in favor of uniforms. And, you know, in some schools, they seem to have been, you know, pretty successful at dealing with some of these controversies.
Are there downsides to these dress codes for the kids, though? Does it kind of stifle their individualism, their creativity?
I think so. And, you know, even in schools with uniforms, kids find a way to make the uniform their own, to tweak them in some way. It's important for young people, or indeed for all people, to be able to express themselves. And clothing is one of the most basic and effective and widespread modes of expression. Another downside of these dress codes, I mentioned before that they are disproportionately enforced against girls. And that gender inequity is a real problem, I think, and particularly when the dress codes are about modesty at a time when young women are going through puberty, their bodies are changing, they're already self-conscious. And then to have a school administrator say, you know, that outfit is, you know, essentially trashy and you can't wear it to school can be psychologically very damaging.
Give me an example of that, because I remember back when I was in school, it was all about short skirts. That was one thing.
Yes, there are a lot of examples. Short skirts. Many schools have rules about, you know, there's a credit card rule where the skirt has to be, you know, no shorter than a credit card away from your knee. One school prohibited exposed collarbones. So the shirts that the girls could wear couldn't expose their collarbones. And in fact, a girl was sent home for wearing a shirt that exposed her collarbones. Mother had to waste a day coming to school to get her. That's quite common. Some schools even go to public shaming, a lot like the sumptuary laws back in the Elizabethan era. So a couple schools have a rule where if you show up wearing something that violates the dress code, they have a big oversized Dayglo t-shirt that says dress code violator on the front, and they make the student wear that for the rest of the day. And again, usually that student is a girl.
As you look back, so it's been 8 years now, 8 or 9 years. How has this shaped the person you have become? I mean, professionally anyway, your current career.
Yeah, it was a really important experience for me to learn that I have a voice that can have an impact. It was a really small thing in the course of my life that I often forget about, honestly. But it was really important for me to learn that my voice does have power. And that the best way to make any kind of positive change is to lead with respect. I approached the whole situation with respect for everyone involved. And because of that, I was able to work with the administration to change things. I'm an actor, a writer, and a producer now. And as a woman in the professional world, it's really important for me to know how to advocate for myself, how to do that, and how to do it well and respectfully. And as a white woman who's in a position of privilege, I'm also in a position to advocate for others who are marginalized in ways I'm not.
I can see 30, 40, 50 years from now, we're going to look back to 2025 and think, wow, they were getting worked up about that.
Exactly. The kind of things, you know, a woman showing her ankles at, you know, in the 19th century was scandalous. A woman wearing pants in the early 20th century was scandalous. A slim cut skirt, as opposed to one with lots and lots of layers, was a scandal. And all of these things were subject to dress code, sometimes actual criminal law enforcement, but in many cases, enforcement for in workplace dress codes and school dress codes. And now, of course, we'd look back and say, really? You know, you were upset about this, you know, someone showing their ankle, but that was common in at one time in history. And I expect we'll look back at some of what we're doing now and people will think like those people were crazy.
I'm Mike Rogers. Thanks so much for listening to Something Offbeat. This episode written and produced by Lauren Barry and Chris Blake. Audio editing by Chris Blake. And original music by Myron Kaplan. Now to keep listening, please subscribe to us on the Odyssey app, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have your own offbeat story that you think we should cover, let us know about it. You can send it to us at somethingoffbeat@Odyssey.com.